Welcome to Lectionary at Lunch. The text that we are looking at today is from Luke 22, verses 7 through 20, and that's the reading for Maundy Thursday. Incidentally, I'm sure you're aware, Maundy is a derivation, you might say, from the Latin mandata, command, which is based on a phrase from the Gospel accounts of the Last Supper, tuto poeta, do this. Do this is what Maundy Thursday is about, the celebration, the remembrance of the Last Supper of Jesus, and hence our text. Now, the pericope that we've been assigned actually has two parts. Most preachers, I suspect, will preach on the second part. Verses 7 through 13 discuss the preparation for the Passover meal, and 14 through 20 is the words spoken over the Last Supper, over this Passover supper. Upper Room account actually continues through verse 38, but that is not part of our lectionary reading and might make for some interesting preaching material, actually. But today we're given 7 through 20 of chapter 22. Now, before we begin, real briefly, the preparation part of this in this is verses 7 through 13 is necessary because Judas, as you see in verses 1 through 6, has agreed to betray Jesus and is looking for a Eucharion in order to paradunai auton. So he's looking for the right time to hand him over to betray him. And Jesus wants to, needs to, as he says, celebrate this meal, this Passover meal with his disciples. So he cannot have Judas interrupt this meal with the betrayal. So he makes preparations in order to eat this meal with his disciples, and that's why we're given such an extended account in verses 7 through 13. So verse 7, Elthende himera ton adzimon. But the day of unleavened things, bread, came. En he ede thuistai ta pascha, in which it was necessary and perfect to be sacrificed, thuistai, the aorist passive infinitive from thuo, the pascha, the Passover lamb. Now, right away, it's incredibly obvious that we are speaking of a Passover meal. So the day of unleavened bread in which it is necessary to sacrifice the Passover lamb, this is the day in which the lambs are slaughtered. The evening which follows is the time when the Passover meal is eaten. So the preparations are being made as the lambs are being slaughtered, and the meal which follows is, of course, the Passover meal. Now this becomes significant later on, as we'll see. It's obviously a Passover meal. I should point out the construction there, ede, the impersonal verb. The object is ta pascha, which becomes the subject to the infinitive, which is complementary to the verb ede. So it was necessary, the Passover, to be sacrificed, which isn't very good English, but in which it is necessary to, or customary, you might say, to sacrifice the Passover lamb. In any case, verse 8. Kai apestelen patron kai Ioannin epon paruthentes et toimasata hemen ta pascha hina phagamen. And he sent, Jesus sent, who is not indicated specifically, but clearly Jesus, sent Peter and John by saying, going paruthentes, the participle from paruomai, aorist participle, et toimasita, aorist imperative, prepare for us, hemen, the dative of advantage, the Passover, in order that we might eat, subjunctive from estheo. The participle here is attendant circumstance, so it's actions that go along with the main verb here, etoimazo, aorist imperative form. Veltz, in his grammar, calls this the bang-bang participle. In any case, go prepare. Same we have with go make disciples in Matthew 28. Anyway, so that we might eat well together. Notice it's a first person plural. Jesus eating with his disciples is the key point here. Verse 9. Hoide aipon auto puthales etoi masamen. But they, that is Peter and John, said to him, "Where do you wish for us that we should prepare?" Now here we have a little syntactical interesting feature. Hetoimasumen is a subjunctive form from hetoimazo, same verb we had earlier. Notice you have the sigma indicating an aorist. Typically, you would lose the augment on a non-indicative form, but because the stem is hetoimazo, the epsilon stays on there, and it's a rough breathing anyway. Hetoimasumen. Earlier, we had in verse 7, ede with the infinitive. That would be a more likely construction. The other more likely construction is to have a hina with the subjunctive following a verb of wishing or thinking, like fellow. And in fact, Nestle doesn't tell you this, but several manuscripts and groups of manuscripts, including Family 13, I believe it is, does add the hina to make it clear. In any case, you have here a subjunctive of purpose. So where do you want us to go in order to prepare, in order that we prepare, first person plural? And then Codex Vaticanus fills in the blank for you and adds the tapasca to prepare the Passover, which is fairly obvious from the context anyway. Verse 10. So point being in verse 9, the disciples don't know what to do. Okay, verse 10. Hade aipen autois idu aisothanton human estein palin senante se humin anthropos karamion huditas bastadzon. Okay, but he said to them, behold, you know, just an interjection here. Look, aisothanton human is a genitive absolute construction. You see your genitive participle, a genitive following without the article, independent from the rest of the sentence. So it's absolute. So after you go into the city, essentially with the aorist tense there, synantese is from a relatively rare verb, synantao. When you go into the city, a person will meet you, synantao means meet, will meet you while carrying a keramion huditas. Keramion, a jar, ceramic, you see the word there, keramion, a ceramic jar of water. And then the imperative, akaluthesata auto es ten okian es hein es peruutai. The imperative, follow him into the city, es hein, hein there with the rough breathing, a relative pronoun, into which house he goes, es peruita. 11, kai erete to oikodespate tes oikias, and he will say, erete is the future active indicative, he will say to the master of the house, the ruler of the house, the owner of the house, is probably the most accurate translation here, the owner of the house, or the guy who, well, the owner of the house, lege soi ha didaskalos. The teacher says to you, puestin ta katalama hapu tapaska metaton mathaton mu phago. Where is the katalama where the Passover with my disciples I may eat? Now, phago there is the is an odd form. Estheo is the present stem. Ephagon is the aorist form. But here you have a subjunctive. You notice the augment falls away, and you have a long connecting vowel, first person. So you have a first person subjunctive, where I may eat, in the subjunctive mood. So where is the katalama? Now, katalama is an interesting word. It seems to have several possible reference. It could be an inn or an upper room of a sort of a eating, drinking establishment. You might say sort of like a pub in British parlance. It could be the upper room of a dwelling place where the family slept separate from the animals. It's actually the same word used in the birth narratives where there's no room in the Katalama for Mary and Joseph. So what exactly this is a little bit unclear in both places. It could be several things. In any case, we typically understand it as a room upstairs in some kind of building. verse 12, Kakenas humin dexai anagion mega estromenon ekai hetoimasita. This one and this one, kakenos, you have an elision there, the chi ekenos, the alpha, iota, epsilon can't stand together, three vowels in a row. So it elides to kakenos. And this one, dexe, the future from deknemi, will show to you anagion, a second story room, see the anagion, the above room, a great above room, a large above room. And then estromenon, perfect middle participle from strenuo, meaning furnished, laid out, prepared, something like that. So an upper room, a big upper room, which is already furnished. You don't need to run to Target and get napkins and things like that on the way. It's all going to be there for you. Okay. And then eke, the adverb there. Hetoimasita, and again, the aorist imperative, there, prepare, the pascha, is implied. 13, apelthantes de huron kathos ereke autois kai hetoimasan ta pascha. But going away, just concluding the paragraph, they found, hirisco, third plural, they found just as, now here's a good form, ereke, here's a pluperfect form of lego. So just as he had said or he had spoken to them, and they prepared, again, hetoimazo, the Passover. Now, one interesting feature here, sometimes a lot is made of, did Jesus, prophesy that all this would happen, foreknow that all this would happen, or had he made arrangements ahead of time? The text isn't clear either way, and it sort of doesn't matter. The point is, Jesus wants to eat this meal and does not want to yet be betrayed. That can't happen till he has this meal with his disciples and finishes his teaching, his final teaching, in the upper room with verse 38. All right. Now I suppose the meat of the text, verse 14. Kaihata egeneta he hora. Anepesen kaihoi apostoloi synauto. And when the hour came, anepesan from anepipto, he reclined and the apostles with him. Now, apostles is Luke's way of referring to the disciples. Mark doesn't call them apostles yet. Most likely there's some textual variance, but the key point here is he's with his chosen ones, the ones he would send out in the second book, in Acts, and he's reclining. The manner of eating, the pascha, a banquet, a dipnon, is to recline on cushions or perhaps what we would call couches. It's a typical Greco-Roman way to eat a banquet. And it doesn't happen very frequently. It's reserved for special festival meals, such as, of course, the Passover. So, in any case, the Da Vinci painting of the Last Supper, where they're sitting at a nice table with chairs and silverware and all that kind of stuff, didn't happen, in case you were wondering, regardless of who is at the right side of Jesus. Anyway, 15. Kai, ipen prosatus, epithymia, epithumesa tuta tapaskaphagen methumon protu me pathen. All right, and he said to them, here's a great construction, epithumia epithumesa. I desired, aorist tense from epithumeo, I desired, and then the dative, epithumia, with desire. This is a cognate dative, where the dative noun is of similar sense and even stem of the verb, and it reinforces the verb. So I have desired with desire, meaning I have greatly desired, or I have earnestly desired, or something like that. I really wanted to do this, okay? I really desired to eat, phagein is the complementary infinitive, again from Estheo, to eat this Passover with you, and this is pra tu me pathein. Now, pathein, the verb, of course, is pasco. And here we have the adverbial infinitive used with the preposition in the article to focus on the action. Pro, giving you a temporal. So before the act of my Pascha. Now you can't miss the connection here. How many times have we had Pascha in verses 7 to 13? 4 or 5? He's eating the Pascha, and he is going to Pascho. Not too hard to see the connection here, right? There has been an eating of a lamb in remembrance of God's deliverance of Israel from slavery, and now one will suffer, will Pascho, to deliver his people finally and perfectly and completely. Verse 16, Lego garhumin hati ume phago ata heas hatu, or hatu, sorry, plerothe ente basileia tu theu. For I say to you that ume phago, ume plus a subjunctive here, same as phago we had earlier, indicates a strong negative assertion. So I will in no way eat, I will not ever eat it. Ata here, the referent being Pascha, I will not eat the Pascha, from verse 15, until which time, hatu, until whatever time, is fulfilled, in the reign of God. Now here Luke is alluding to, or Jesus, sorry, is alluding to what Luke describes elsewhere as the wedding feast of the Lamb, the Messianic banquet. So this is the last banquet Jesus will celebrate. It's the meal, the banquet, that will continue to be celebrated until he comes again in the ultimate unity of God with his people at the wedding feast of the Lamb. Reign of God here, of course, already began with the showing up of Jesus. He proclaimed it in Luke 4 when he shows up at his synagogue and says, today this is fulfilled in your hearing. Here the reign of God is the final manifestation of the reign of God, a future manifestation, a complete manifestation. Verse 17. Now the words of institution, as we call them, and this shouldn't be too difficult for you, or me, thankfully. Kai dexamenos paterion eucharistesas eipen. Dexamenos, aorist participle from dekamai. Eucharistesas, aorist participle from eucharisto. So taking the cup, having given thanks, or having given a blessing, is probably the more Jewish way to say it. He said, labata tuta, aorist participle from lambano. Take this, kai diamerisita eis heautus. Take this and divide it among yourselves. So you have the bread, a blessing is spoken over it. I'm sorry, you have the cup, a blessing is spoken over it, and they drink from the cup. Diem rizzo, to divide among yourselves. Why? Lego gar humin hati ume peo, apa tenun apo tu genematas tes ampelu, haos hu he basileia tu theu elthe. For I say to you that I will in no way drink. And there's the from Pino, subjunctive of Pino. I will in no way drink from the now time, you got to fill in Cairo here, from the present time, from now on, I will not drink from the fruit of the vineyard or fruit of the vine until who, which time, neuter relative pronoun, until which time the kingdom of God comes. So here again, reign of God is mentioned. Final, last day. Then verse 19. Kai laban artan oikaristesas eklasin kai edakin autois lagan tuto esten ta samamu tahuper herman didominon. In taking the loaf, or the bread, having given thanks, he broke and gave, all these are aorists, and says to them, saying to them, tuta estenta, this is my body, to hupa herman didomen, which is given hupa herman. Huper is a difficult preposition, or an interesting preposition. What exactly does it mean? Does it imply a substitutionary idea? Is it which is given for your sake, sort of concerning you? It's often substituted with peri in the manuscripts, and they're used interchangeably by the gospel writers. However, it often occurs in context of sacrifice, which it does here as the Passover, and Jesus going through his Pascha. So it doesn't seem out of place to suggest that huper implies or brings along with it substitutionary ideas, which is given in your place. Fits very well with the Passover theme. Tuta poeta eis tein emein enamnesin. Do this into my remembrance, anamnesis. Now, here, things kind of go astray for a lot. Well, let me finish verse 20, and then we'll talk about anamnesis. Kai ta poterion hasatas meta ta depnesai legon. And the cup, likewise, after the act of eating, aorist infinitive from dipno, saying this is where the grammar gets goofy. This cup is new diatheke in my blood, which huperhemon and kenomenon. So which is enkenuo haima. That idiom is used very frequently and seems to mean almost exclusively sacrificed. Blood sacrificed, or the sacrifice of blood. So the blood which is sacrificed for you, or sacrificed in your place, as we saw earlier. Now, the question is, what does the ta refer to? Ta huper hemon en kenomenon? Grammatically, it could refer either to the cup or to the blood, because both of those are neuter. But, of course, what Jesus is doing is metaphor. The cup is standing for the contents of the cup, which is the wine. So the cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is sacrificed for you. And, again, sacrifice, I think, is the right way to render this, both because of the idiom and because of the context of the Passover. Now, there's a lot to do here theologically, obviously, and let me start off with the question of what was a Jewish Passover. The best source for this still is Joachim Jeremias' Eucharistic Words of Jesus. I believe it's 1966 is the English translation, and Jeremias pulls together the evidence for what was likely a Passover at the time of Jesus, pre-70 A.D., at least as best as we can tell. What you have in a Passover is preparatory things like the telling of the Passover narrative, the Exodus narrative. At the point we have a description beginning in verse 14, we have the meal portion. The meal portion is preceded by two other cups of wine. And this meal portion would have consisted of a blessing spoken over the bread, and then the eating of the lamb, and then a third cup was blessed and drunk. And what you have in Luke, at least the way the Nestle text presents it, is probably the second and the third cup. So in verse 20, you have the cup after the eating of the meal, after the lamb. So you've got an extended period of time in between the bread and the wine. The blessing over the bread is spoken, the meal is eaten, the meat is eaten, and then the blessing over the third cup, only two of which are described in the Nestle text of Luke here. What was a Passover? And this is key for our understanding of anamnesis. The Passover meal was not simply, you know, let's remember what happened, sort of like Reformation Day. You remember, you know, the posting of the 95 Theses or something like this. The Passover, an anamnesis throughout the Old Testament, is bringing the past into the present. So what happened to Israel back in the Exodus happens to us now. God makes for himself a people, and we participate in God's action of making a people by celebrating this meal, by remembering, by being incorporated into his fellowship as his people of ages past and ages to come. The allusion, of course, is to Deuteronomy 16:3, which they give you in the margin of the Nestle text, which says, remember the day of your departure. Remember. All right? Remember what God made you, and continue to live as his people as a result of his inbreaking, as a result of his keseth, as a result of his charis. God broke in. So do this in remembrance of me is not sort of, you know, think happy thoughts about Jesus. Remember that he loves you. But do this meal as a bringing into your present what he has done on the cross, or in the case of the context here, what he will do on the cross. So when you eat this bread and you drink this cup, as Paul describes it in 1 Corinthians 11, you are proclaiming the Lord's death until he comes. You are gathered as his people, receiving the benefits of his work in this meal. Now, a lot is made, of course, the question of real presence or what is the relationship between bread and wine, body and blood. Linguistically, I think it's difficult to press the case that grammatically the words of Jesus require a literal, to use that word, understanding. The problem you have is the verb estin, and it's not even present in a Lucan text, but the verb estin can mean is like. It's used in parables. It's used in metaphorical language. Jesus says, I am the door. Doesn't mean he's a piece of wood. If you want to discuss the real presence, the place to go is 1 Corinthians 10 and 11. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not a koinonia of the body of Christ, or koinonia of the blood of Christ? So the wording in Luke certainly is ambiguous, but is clarified for us in 1 Corinthians 10 and 11. Second thing to point out here, perhaps, Luke does not mention forgiveness of sins. In fact, Matthew is the only account that mentions the forgiveness of sins. Doesn't seem to be the specific focus in the Lucan account, or Mark's account, or the 1 Corinthians account, for that matter. What is going on here is a focus on Jesus looking forward to his death, to the ultimate restoration of his people on the last day at the Messianic banquet. So he is providing them a meal which will sustain his people until he comes again. He is making for himself a people who are participating in his new exodus, his new gathering of his people. I think it's unmistakable that the reference in verse 20 to my blood of the new covenant goes back, as you see in our Nestle margin, to Exodus 24:8. The allusion, and it's clearer in Mark, granted, is to the shedding of the blood which is poured out on the people when God establishes, or you might say reestablishes, his covenant with Abraham at Mount Sinai with the people he's just brought out of Exodus. Jesus is the fulfillment of that covenant. It is his blood which makes his people, his blood which defines his people, His blood, which is given for his people. His blood, which is sacrificed for his people. And for that reason, I really have, I don't think there's any question that the Atheke here must be understood as covenant. It's in a Passover context. It's in an Exodus context. It's a new covenant in the sense that it's renewed, fulfilled, not sort of, new, different, but new fulfillment. I know in the Lutheran tradition there is concern about understanding this as covenant, meaning a two-sided agreement. You know, you make your deal, I'll make my, or you have your stipulations, I have mine, and we together uphold this as if there's some sort of a synergistic agreement between us and God in the covenant. That understanding, what Luther was reacting against, is based on a misunderstanding of the word covenant. It's rather clear that berith in the Old Testament, at least in the examples when discussing God making his people, are God calling his people, making his people, choosing his people for his own sake and his own purposes, not because Israel deserved it or merited it or anything like this. So I think we are losing something when we fail to see the covenant Passover connection between the Israel of the flesh or the Israel of the Old Testament and the Israel of God, as Paul calls it, of the New Testament. We are God's people. We have been led out of slavery in Egypt. We have been called through Abraham. We are children of Abraham, as Paul describes us in Galatians 3. We are heirs of the covenant. And all that God promised by grace through faith to Abraham is now ours through the blood of Jesus. And this happens as a people. God is making for himself a people through the death of Jesus. And as we eat this bread and drink this cup, we participate in his death, and having been made a people, waiting for his new creation on the last day. So there's not much individuality going on in this meal. It's a people meal. It's a church meal. It's God gathering his people together, sustaining them until he comes again. I guess I'll cut it off here. I'm over time. I'll just comment, just because it's my thing. If you don't care about text criticism, you can stop listening now. But if you look at your Nestle text, there's a rather interesting reading where in verse 19, after Tassam Amu, you have the omission of everything from Tahoper Hermon Didomenon all the way through Enkenomenon at the end of verse 20. And this is omitted, or I should say it's lacking, in Codex Bezae, as you see in your apparatus, and much of the old Latin tradition prior to the Vulgate. Westcott and Hort in the 19th century, I think with good reason, considered this a secondary text, that is, that the original text of Luke ended at verse 19b with Tassam Amu, so that you had the order cup bread, and then scribes or editors, however you want to call them, noticed the discrepancy and filled in the correct order with essentially the reading of 1 Corinthians. Everything from 19c through verse 20 is from 1 Corinthians, except the Tahoper Humon and Kenomenon, which is grafted over from Mark and Matthew. So you see the obvious problem here. If those words had originally stood in the text, why would they have been deleted? There are other, the Syriac flips the words around or flips the first cup over and makes it follow the bread, which would be the right order. So there are several ways to deal with the problem. And I happen to think that the Nestle text has incorrectly changed the Westcott Hort text here. And probably most likely Luke ended the Lord's Supper narration, Words of Institution narration, with Tassam Amu. And in order to fix the problem, the rest of it was added. To my mind, it doesn't change the theology of the text at all. I suppose you don't have the word covenant appearing in the shorter form of the text. But the Passover context is clear enough. What it does give us, perhaps, is more of a focus on the last day, which is not really present in 19c. In any case, it doesn't really matter. You do have these words, of course, in 1 Corinthians. Whether or not they appear in Luke is not, I think, that significant an issue. It just is a matter of what you want to emphasize in your preaching. So I'll leave you with that, and blessings on your celebration, observance of our Lord's suffering, and especially his resurrection.